Welcome to another episode of This Week in Crypto. My name is Singh, and this is the episode for May 6th, 2018. In episode 16, we're going to talk about how there are now less than 4 million Bitcoin left to mine. South Korea set to legalize ICOs under new conditions. Goldman Sachs creating Bitcoin? And Japan could pressure exchanges to drop Monero, Dash, and Zcash. This and much, much more in This Week in Crypto. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of This Week in Crypto. Episode 16 is going to be an interesting one. It's kind of special because we're trying something new here. As always, CCG is always evolving. And, well, we're trying to do something where we incorporate our TA analyst, Gaurav, who is the TA for Traders Guru over at Crypto Coin Guru. And let's have this discussion and see where it goes. Like I said, we're always evolving. And in this episode, we're using some new software and new equipment. So there is going to be a degradation in sound, and we do apologize in advance. But we're working out the bugs, and hopefully for the next episode, we're going to have a much, much better audio quality. Well, without wasting too much time, let's go ahead and get into this episode.
The first thing, obviously, before we start out, wanted to ask, what got you started into this sphere, into the whole crypto sphere that we have, getting into investing or getting into learning about crypto?
So for me, I think I would consider myself a fairly early adopter, probably not the first 1/6, and definitely not the first 1/6 in this phase. I wish I were. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to support new technologies, and especially when they have the prospect of transforming whole industries and changing the way that we look at things and how we deal with whether it's our economics or the politics of things.
Right.
And when I came across Bitcoin, at first I really didn't understand much of it. Mm-hmm. But the more that I dug in, I got more and more excited at the prospect of what could be possible. And honestly, I think whatever I've learned up until now only gets me more excited because the possibilities are, they seem to be endless, because as more and more people, bright people, will be taking more of an interest and active role and bringing in their skill set. I mean, who knows what this is going to turn into. So it's just really exciting.
Right. And the fact that I'm sure it makes it even more exciting when, you see governments that are up against the ropes. It's almost like a little turn of the tables. Well, guys, now what?
Right. And I think a lot of it, these are cycles that you see whenever there's a new technology or an innovation that can upend things. And really isn't controllable in a very tangible way. Governments want to be able to stamp that down. They want to be able to control it. Rather than having the internet, you want to have the intranet. And you see the corporate sector trying to do this as well. Banks trying to control it, because that is their approach to everything. It comes out of sort of a self-preserving tendency.
Right.
And it's natural, yeah. I suppose, because at least from the for-profit sector, the bottom line is what counts, and so you got to protect yourself above all else.
Right. Oh, the human tendency is self-preservation, right? And I wouldn't see any difference when it comes to government. I mean, they want to preserve the power or preserve themselves, but it's going to be difficult, especially if blockchain gets a nice footing, because it's going to spread that power quite evenly.
Yeah, well, I don't really see the struggle with governments as such.
Okay.
I see this more of a struggle with private sector adoption. And I think because the when we say the powers that be, the powers that be that are threatened in this case really is our financial institutions.
Right.
And really the middlemen that or women, so to speak,
right.
The ones who are taking out such a large slice and the efficiency gains that will be possible through cryptocurrency, mm-hmm. They are the ones that are kind of profiting from that, which is why I think if the government were directly threatened, I think we would see more of a stamping down happening earlier than it has. I mean, it's not like we're in year one. We are several years into this. And so I think there's probably the prospect of being able to control it, which is what, the governments wanted to do with the internet and still do, right. You know, whether it's giving too much power to the ISPs, mm-hmm. and being able to sort of shunt off. And, China is doing the same thing.
Right.
Creating a moat around their own version of the internet and with cryptocurrency as well, with the various platforms. And, they'd like to make it more China-centric. So I think these are kind of experiments that I see a lot of parallels between the internet and crypto.
Right. And you're absolutely right in that sense that, I mean, this is something that it's in its infancy. So honestly, I see it only progressing at this point. It's just how are we going to progress? And a lot of that's going to be dependent on how these nations, because it's not just the U.S., it's a global thing that's happening here. It's a global trend. How is each nation going to react? Like we have Japan reacting a certain way, the US, and then Malta saying, hey, come on in, right? Let's do this thing. So
right,
that's where it's going to be kind of interesting, that shift of power may go from these big leagues like the US and China, and it may end up in the hands of smaller nations because they are more open to this innovation.
Yes. And I think you're right. However, I think there's different aspects to that conundrum because you've got trading and exchanges, which can be moved to smaller countries with a regulatory environment that is friendly. But at the end of the day, the people who are buying, let's say we're in the US and we're buying on an exchange elsewhere, we still have ramifications for taxes that we have to deal with here. And those are not clear,
right.
And that's not presented yet in a way that is neatly packaged and frankly sensible. Because I think Germany and other countries are doing a much better job of taxing it in a lower way, which will lead to more adoption and quicker adoption. And U.S. considering how much of a say and stake we have in this, considering the number of people around the world who are involved. The U.S. has the most.
Right.
So it would make sense. It's to our benefit, to the government's benefit, to be able to make it easier and be able to get the taxes out of the gains, hopefully.
Absolutely. I mean, I kind of think that they're right now, at least in the U.S., we're being double screwed, as I guess is the best way to put it. We've got the IRS calling it property, the SEC trying to make it a security. And then even when you use it to transact as a currency, now you've got a double whammy. Like, how do you go about it? So, yeah, absolutely. I think there is a need to kind of figure out what the heck they want to label this thing as.
Yes. And I think in some ways, the quicker that gets figured out, we can sort of take that next step and be able to use, whether it's via the Lightning Network, whether it's Litecoin or Bitcoin or other currencies for daily use. And I think that's where it will really start to get very, very exciting,
right.
as if it weren't already.
Yeah.
The crypto has been a wonder in my life,
uh-huh.
as somebody who's been in investing for quite a while. But I enjoyed the day ending at certain times.
and with investing here, it does not end. Right.
People around the world pick up exactly where we would be exhausted and left off. So yeah, this is amazing. It's doing wonders for my health.
Yeah. Well, just leading into that, I mean, some of the news from this past week, Japan, we saw pressuring exchanges to drop Monero, Dash, and I think it was Zcash, correct?
That is correct. And so So FSA, which is the Japanese equivalent to the SEC,
yeah,
essentially they're going after these currencies, and I think more so Monero than Zcash or Dash.
Right. That's fine. But I was just going to say, yeah, Monero, because that is the true anonymity coin, because that's built into the actual coin itself. Whereas I believe the other two, Zcash and Dash, they can actually have moments where they're not anonymous, or you have
correct.
To select
it's it. Optional.
Yeah.
Yes, it's optional. And I can see that is probably a reason why, for instance, and I think Zcash, if I remember correctly, the creators of Zcash had mentioned that they wanted this to be a bank-friendly coin with anonymity built in, so that it would give that protection that institutions might need
to check into it.
Right, yeah. Correct. However, I mean, they took it as a balancing act, but I can see how that creates a bit of a problem, because if it's not quite anonymous, then you know it's not really that secure as such.
Right.
And but Monero, for obvious reasons, they've kept up with the moat that they've built around it, that, you know, it is going to be private and it's going to be anonymous. And what you don't know is generally something that governments tend to be afraid of. And right. And you hear the same criticism, you know, it's the, oh my God, it's the illicit use, drug money, and the
nefarious,
you know, who knows, yeah. Nefarious dark corners of the web,
right.
The dark web. And, but you know, the best way to deal with illicit activities.
Cash.
Yes, it's always been the greenback.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily crypto. Who wants to jump through all those hoops,
right,
when somebody can use cash?
Cold, dirty cash. That's the best way, yes, to do it.
But untraceable.
Yes, guys.
For the most part.
We're not telling you how to do or commit crimes. So please don't go out and go take cash and go commit any crimes. But yeah, absolutely. And honestly, it seems like while there's a lot of these corporations that are now getting in or lining up to enter this market, it almost seems like the regulators want it to be less anonymous so that there is more control.
Yes. But you know, the one thing which I've found really bizarre is the criticism against Bitcoin that, mm-hmm, you know, is being used for these illicit purposes. And it's really quite a ridiculous proposition, because all the transactions are transparent and they're available.
Exactly.
On the ledger.
Which a lot of people found out when they got busted by the law, because they thought it was anonymous.
It's about as transparent as you can possibly get, and it's there for all time,
mm-hmm,
provided the internet is around.
Right, right. And
so
that's what kind of threw me off just the last week, after everyone's been talking about Bitcoin is not anonymous. It's there for everyone to see. I think some lady in Illinois decided that she wanted to hire someone to murder, I don't know what it was, like this other woman that her husband was seeing or something. That I don't remember the news quite, frankly, but she got caught. And it's funny because she's surprised that she got caught. No, you can see everything on that ledger.
I mean, you know, I think the funny thing is that people bank on, apparently this lady was banking on, is that the transaction ID is there, but you don't really know who it's going to and from. But, you know, those are markers, and one can connect dots. And there are companies that have been on this trend for and working to uncover and make sure that they look at wallet addresses. I mean, how do we know about Satoshi's wallet and how many coins there might be in it, or others who hold, right, a lot of money? And when there's a heist, you know, because of wallets,
yeah,
and you know if it gets moved to another wallet, you have the address. Uh-huh. So I mean, it can be connected, and that is the whole point behind it. The point was that you don't need a trusted third party, i.e., banks,
correct,
the intermediaries, to be able to take a large slice of every transaction and make everything ineffective and costly, and not necessarily because it was going to give us anonymity.
Right, right. And we kind of don't want anonymity, right? We wanted to keep these guys honest. And how can we keep them honest if we can't see what they're doing? So
right,
I think
right.
Satoshi had a very, very deep understanding of that if everything can be chucked up by the average person, everyday person, then maybe the banks wouldn't be able to kind of screw us over from our out of our money.
And I think, you know, Satoshi, for I mean, I wouldn't presume to say I would know what he knew. Clearly, the code is impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, all the things, the wheels, once they were set in motion, who knows where they lead? I don't think any founder really has a full grasp of where things will lead in time. And when so many other people who are excited by the work and are able to create, and it just, you know, it's a snowball effect, and you right. have no idea where it's going to lead. And, you know, Monero is just one derivation of what was set in motion by Satoshi, you know, about those 9 years ago. And, right. You know, whether it's different platforms, and we just see that the opportunities with these decentralized applications, possibilities are endless.
Right.
And it's, yes, it's very exciting.
Yeah. I mean, and the interesting thing is, at least what's going on in Japan is, we saw that earlier Japan cleared house with when it came to their prospective applicants on who could become an exchange or who could be a viable exchange. And then they decided that these exchanges needed licensing and whatnot. And they obviously they did this after that $530 million hack or something like that, that CoinCheck faced in early January.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now you see either that these exchanges are either shutting down or they're being sanctioned for, well, I guess, what they call insufficient security policies. And then you see some exchanges like Binance who are saying, you know, see ya, guys, we're going to Malta because we can do whatever we want and really operate without, you know, Japanese law or the FSA or whatever it may be. But I guess the question is if these anonymity coins are, like Japan is doing, if none of the exchanges in Japan can use anonymity coins, and if they do, they may not be, or they may be in violation, or they could be shut down, or whatever they decide to do, what does that mean for anonymity coins? I mean, a part of me thinks that maybe, yeah, there will be a price drop, but this is a global phenomenon. And, you know, if there's other nations that are willing to keep it or pick it up and whatnot, mind you, I probably should mention that the reason why they don't want these anonymity coins is because for some reason they found that North Korea was funneling money through Monero or one of these three coins. But regardless, if Japan kicks it out of the country, who's to say there are so many other countries out there, the coins aren't going to die. It's just going to be harder for Japan to kind of control what's going on in their borders because people are going to put them in Monero outside of the country and use it still. And so that's what kind of gets me.
Right, right. And that doesn't quite make a lot of sense. I mean, I agree. I was just thinking Monero, the total market cap is like $3-3.5 billion.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how much is North Korea dealing in? You know,
right.
it's clearly not going to be that much.
Correct.
And so I don't know if that's the reason. I think a lot of this probably is that countries are struggling with how to deal with this new thing. And, yeah. And there's an urge to control. And because it's not banned as such, they are mm-hmm. talking regulations.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
They're pressuring exchanges to drop Monero, Zcash, and Dash. What if the exchanges say no?
Mm-hmm.
There's a demand for it. Now
right.
what? Are you going to actually ban and see where it goes? Because again, as you correctly pointed out, is that simply banning it really doesn't mean much because people who are going to use it will simply go around that exchange and use a different one. And unless you're banning the internet now, which nobody's going to do, least
right.
of all Japan, because they're right. the bleeding edge of the technological adoption. So I just don't see that happening. And I mean, I'd be interested to see how it breaks. But I think some of the hardline talk, the rhetoric that we are hearing, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me that some of these countries like Japan or the US would actually clamp down, because if that were the case, they wouldn't be the leaders of technology.
Right, right. And honestly, it's kind of funny because we saw South Korea do this earlier. They banned ICOs. And it just goes to show that now South Korea is deciding that they're going to legalize ICOs, that maybe it was a bad idea.
Yes, yes. And of course, you know, this is not to say that there were any nefarious reasons behind this for the people who were behind that ban anyway.
Right.
And all the FUD that was being created because politicians were caught with their hand in the cookie jar.
Exactly.
Right? as soon as all this ban info comes out, the market tanks, and you know these guys are buying.
Right.
And so I mean, you know, it's humans, it's greed. At the end of the day, it's fear and greed. And whether it's policies and regulations, and people who have the power will use what they can towards their own ends and perceived needs. So, you know, I don't put any of this past them, but I don't think it's a sustainable move if they were to try to ban it because how do you ban it? People can go around it.
You can't. It's very difficult. You can't ban it. And that's the interesting thing. I think South Korea learned that. And as of earlier this month, they decided, hey, you know what? Maybe that's not a good idea. Maybe we're losing out. And I would like to see ICOs regulated to a point where the investors can safely and securely invest. And I think what that'll do is that'll open up the channels where more people will feel like they can invest. And at the end of the day, that's good for everyone. But at the same time...
Well, I don't know if it's good for everyone as such, because it's definitely good for the startups, because they're not having to give up any equity.
Right.
You know, these VCs will come in and take a chunk away from these startups and offer their quote-unquote support, which I'm sure a lot of companies have been able to benefit from. But you have to give up a lot. I mean, you know, it's a shark tank at the end of the day. You know, they are taking a bite out of something, and it hurts your behind. So I guess it is.
I guess I should correct myself. By everyone, I mean me and all the little guys that are investing. Because let's be honest, I really, you know, the big leagues or the companies, they're going to make their money regardless. But what I'd like to see in this ICO kind of space is I'd like to see scam coins just kind of bite the dust. And I think that would make investing so much easier for the majority of us.
Yes, yes. And I think that is the major concern. And I think even some talk that has been going on, whether it's the bigger banks looking into being able to offer ICOs and so forth, and facilitate that the way the Wall Street has always done with the IPOs, is that you've got to be able to protect the investors. But I mean, I'll just throw it out there. Who gets to invest in IPOs? You know, it's people with means. Right? And so really, it's the protection for the people who can really afford this to begin with before it gets to, you know, the mom and pops on Main Street. And that will be a while, but we want protection, no doubt.
Right. But I have, see, with the IPOs, I kind of have that issue that why can the government, or why can you tell me, shouldn't it be my own responsibility? And then shouldn't I be more careful in the sense that I should only put in?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it is up to individuals. However, I think, you know, when we had the 2008 downfall, now, that was not a 2008 downfall. It was really predictable. And I recall my finance class. It was 2005 early. I was at the University of Chicago, and my finance professor had mentioned just casually that, you know, if you own real estate right now, it might be a good time to get out.
To get out.
And and rent. And that struck me. Unfortunately, I had an issue going on, which I was not able to sell my property. However, it was prescient because it took a little while for that to come true. But for people who would have known back then, like in 2005 or 2006, to get out where the market had been on a tear, And and people who could connect these dots, I mean, it was known. But when do you think the moms and pops got into the game? They got into the game
way late
because they always get in the game late. Again, because it's fear and greed at play, right? They are not able to. It's a fear of missing out at the end of the day. And now you see that it's gone up and it's gone up. And oh my God, everybody's making money. And the taxi driver's saying, you know, you should be putting money into this thing. And so you go ahead and you do it. And and it's a little late because the smart money's already left.
Exactly.
So, so the end of the day, you know, the regulations come in because people get voted into office. So yes, it was the moms and pops' fault to put their money in late. Unfortunately, because they don't understand how these investments, quote unquote, work, but they can vote you out of office. So that's why I think the regulations have to be there. And and I think, but the operative word in what you mentioned was scam, right?
Yeah.
Because if it's a legitimate business and it goes under, well, you know, that's the market at play and it's going to happen from time to time. And but if it's a scam, and that's a problem, because right now, you know, there's, you know, the Long Island, what is it, blockchain tea company? Or?
Oh, yeah. Long Island iced tea.
That was ridiculous. Iced tea. Yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, things like that have to stop because there is no reason why that should be going up. But people are throwing money at anything that was that had a name blockchain in it.
Yeah.
So And ICOs, I mean, who can understand it? How many people really read white papers before putting the money in?
Oh, please. Sometimes I...
And asking questions.
Sometimes I try to fall asleep. That's my little Xanax, is reading a white paper.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, not many people want to.
Right. And the problem is that there's 1,500 plus coins. So how many white papers is anybody going to read? And at the end of the day, even if you do read them, does it stick? Do you even know what to look for? I can't say that I do. I mean, we're talking about a burgeoning asset class with so many different types of applications, and each of them are trying to make themselves sound different. How does a person get to know? And especially in a country where balancing the checkbook, you know, is a rarity.
Right.
I mean, not that's probably dates me because nobody's using checkbooks, right. And least of all me. But how do you know different?
Right.
I don't think you do, and that's why you got to protect people from these scams, is because it's so difficult to understand. I mean, try reading Apple's or Facebook's privacy policy.
Oh.
I mean, how many have you had to sign in the last week and a half or 2 weeks since Mark Zuckerberg was on?
Let's be honest.
Who's reading those things?
Yeah, not me, that's for sure. I'm not even bothering. I'm like, yeah, except just get me in. I don't care. So, yeah, nobody.
Right. Well, Facebook, you know, I can say with some pride that I deleted my account and I have not used it in quite a while anyway.
Oh, but you're stronger than I am.
You, and who knows? I may have to use it for other purposes, for social, I should say, really business reasons.
Right.
Using that social network, but I mean, you know, Monero has a good argument.
Yeah, the more we talk about it,
I don't want everyone tracking me.
Yeah, the more it sounds like Monero's got a better argument to exist. But what I really like what South Korea is doing is, and I believe the Republic or the it's the Democratic Party of Korea. The guy's name is Hong, and what they're trying to do is they're getting the Financial Service Commission, the Ministry of Science, and the ICT, which I've looked, but I can't find what the ICT stands for. So maybe I'll keep Googling later on here. But it seems like what they want to do is they want to make sure that ICOs are not banned, but they only want controlled ICOs, like from, I guess, what I was reading, education sector or innovative sector, things that are given back to their society, right? Willy-nilly ICOs that may not have anything to do with anything, for that matter. And I think that might be a good way to go about it, but I guess time will tell.
Well, you know, what's great about being in a global space is that you know, just like in the U.S., we try to do is that, you know, the different states get to experiment, and then you figure out what works and what doesn't work. You know, California is years ahead than the rest of the country, and you see whether it's you know, climate change effects and regulations based on vehicle emissions, mm-hmm. and what California was doing 15 years ago, we're trying to catch up now. And so, in a way, in this asset class and the transforming economy, South Korea and other countries will get to lead the way, and you know, some things will work and other things won't. And I think we will get to learn. And sometimes I think, you know, I have to remind myself that it is so early in the game. You know, I feel like, oh my God, I missed out because you know, I didn't buy Bitcoin much earlier. But it is really, really early in the game, because the objective is not merely to own Bitcoin. You know, it's going to change entire industries and how we conduct things. Right. So from that aspect, it's the application of the technology and the ideas where, you know, it's a long arc, and things are going to take a while.
Yeah.
I mean, the internet took a long time to come around, and
absolutely.
Yes, probably things are going to happen faster, mm-hmm. but it's still going to take a while.
Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right. I forget this too. I forget that we are in a very infantile stage right now. And we haven't even scratched the surface. And I forget, because a day in crypto seems like a year in crypto for some odd reason. And
yes, yes. Well, in our infancy, we seem to have a very little concept of time.
Right.
And I can say that, you know, as much as I try to stay away from technology, and that's something that I've been fighting for a while.
Uh-huh.
But, I'll wake up and I'm, that's one of the things that I want to do is check out, you know, how things are happening. How's Korea faring?
Right. Right. And
and
I guess people are right. The more I listen, the more I read, the more I look at this stuff. It is the experiment of our time, because nobody really knows. So we're a living experiment right now.
Yes. And that is what is exciting. And that is also what is scary to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And which is why you will hear the, you know, the great Warren Buffett, who I have tremendous respect for as an investor, and what he's been doing for 50 years. I mean, it's incredible. You know, and him calling Bitcoin rat poison squared.
That makes me want to slam my head against the wall repetitively. But
all I did was, when I heard that, was yum. Rat poison squared is tasting good to me.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's just that, you know, people like him whose opinion really matters. But the thing is, when people start putting too much stock into what Warren Buffett is saying about this, mm-hmm. is that Warren Buffett invests in things in a very different way. It's counterintuitive to what the market has been doing or looking at. You know, he was very disparaging of the internet.
Yeah,
he was disparaging of Google, Amazon, and I think those companies did okay. So he's not going to be right about everything.
I think they did more than okay. I kind of wish I was involved way earlier on. But yeah.
Well, we couldn't be involved with Google and Amazon, but we are with Bitcoin, thankfully.
That's true. but I keep telling myself, this guy doesn't even have a smartphone. So is he probably the best barometer for this sector here, telling us about what is good or not good in the tech sector? And it just kind of makes me think, probably not.
No, but here's the thing. I mean, for what he knows, where he has a command and a knowledge of various industries.
Oh yeah.
So he knows that. I trust his opinion. It's very, very informed.
Yeah.
Also, you know, he has the resources to be able to get his own terms. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would buy a stock at a spot price. Warren Buffett will not. He will get a discount.
Right.
When he put money into Bank of America, you know, whether it was the railways, he got a massive discount, and he ended up making a lot of money because, especially when money was scarce, he had a lot of it. And so he got to dictate. So when you're in a favorable position that none of the world really has to deal with, you kind of are able to say a lot and get away with it because you kind of create things your own way because you have billions and billions in cash sitting around.
Right. And money talks.
And yes. So he knows what he's talking about in his own sphere.
Right.
And I think when he's looking at things, he's probably looking at a 60, 70 year arc, you know, ever since when he started buying stocks at a very young age.
There's more history with stocks.
Yeah. So he's looking at a very long arc and he's saying, well, you know what? I've seen fads come and go, and this could just be well be a fad. Uh-huh. But in order for him to really understand Bitcoin, it requires a lot, even of very intelligent people, because it's not intuitive. It's not something that's just readily available by simply reading a summary that you can understand what the implications might be.
Yeah.
If it were, you know, people would have gotten into it a lot earlier.
Right. And it seems like the blockchain engineers have a different definition of it and how it's evolving. The investors have a different definition of it and how it's evolving. The UI UX zone has its own definition. So it's almost like you can't get one cohesive definition. And maybe that's a good thing.
Yes. Because you could kind of box it, you know.
Right.
And I don't know if it would be good for it to be boxed. I mean, I would rather that the notion sets people off and it has people going off on tangents and bringing in their particular talents and view of the world and seeing where it could be applied.
Right.
And which is what's exciting about some of these ICOs that are coming out is that there are some really, really exciting ideas out there. I mean, I had a friend who's doing his doctorate and he was talking about the difficulty that people who are even well-educated have in getting mentors and being able to find the right connections for right position and even for companies to be able to look for talent. And just shortly after that, a friend of mine who was at the Harvard Innovation Lab is coming out with a coin that is dealing with pretty much the exact same thing that my friend was talking about a few months ago.
Right.
And the Xperfy coin. And so it's just very interesting on how many things can, I mean, LinkedIn is great.
Yeah.
I use it. And this is just LinkedIn on massive steroids. You know, just the applications of it are tremendous and not just a learning zone or connecting people, but there's so much more that can be done and monetized. And so it's very exciting.
Yeah, it is definitely an exciting time. But I'm going to use that Bank of America. I'm going to go back to that and segue it into Goldman Sachs and this kind of flippening that they're doing about Bitcoin is not a fraud anymore. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
yes.
So
Jamie Dimon, Goldman Sachs.
Oh, gosh. But May 2nd here, the Goldman exec, I believe Rana Yard is her name, said that basically after they called it inundated by being inundated by a client request, the bank has decided that Bitcoin is maybe not a fraud. And I highly doubt it's because its customers or its clients were requesting it. There's more to that than she's leading on.
Well, Antonopoulos had done a wonderful job of explaining this human tendency. You know, it's just the stages of grief.
Yeah.
And it all starts with denial. And I think we are on the way to acceptance, but that too is a long arc. And,
you're not talking about the river anymore, are you?
You know, here's the thing. The people at Wall Street, they're not dummies. I mean, there's a reason why they consider themselves to be the masters of the universe.
Yeah.
They are smart people. They know how to make money. Well, likely because they've been controlling a lot of it. And now when something comes along that could actually transplant you and the reason for your existence, you want to deny it, you want to slander, you want to do whatever you possibly can, kick and scream to say, you know, foul, you can't do that. And when it doesn't seem to work and this thing doesn't seem to die, then what do? You try
take
to corrupt
control.
It. Yeah. So they'll try to co-opt it. Right now, they'll sort of get into trading. Well, it's our customers and clients who want to do this. So fine, we'll do this. But then it'll be, you know, and you know, it's not like they're going to start this now. You and I both know that these major banks, including Chase, have been at it for years trying to create some alternative, you know, whether IBM's been working on the blockchain initiative for a while. And but we know these banks are also working on their own way to control it, have their own little coins and corner it off, have their own intranet, so to speak.
Exactly. And I think it was earlier this year or late last year, Bank of America had the highest patents in blockchain. I think they were leading with 41 patents. And yet they were, you know, obviously loud and proud that Bitcoin is not the way to go, guys. Save yourself. Bitcoin's the apocalypse. But they're investing in the technology, not even on the financial end, but they're getting their hands deep, deep into that cookie jar.
Yes, yes. And here's the funny thing. I mean, the benefits, as soon as banks start to take charge of, really poor choice of words, not charge. We definitely don't want that.
Right.
As soon as they jump in the game, the benefits to the banks will be immediate, because to be able to have a single source of truth, to be able to have all this information be distributed securely, you know, they're not involved as much in the process, the middlemen and the cuts they got, but the improvement of the transaction times and cutting down the costs and the redundancies. I mean, it's the benefit is immediate, and it's like, what, $50 billion a year is what they're thinking.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, the whole Litecoin transfer that happened, what was that, $40 million? Or was it billion?
No. It was several tens of millions. I can't remember how much it was.
Right.
I'm thinking $99 million, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. But I could
You're
be wrong.
Right.
I mean, but the cost was a whopping 40 cents.
Like, where do you get that? Nowhere. Yes. So you're right. It's beneficial for these banks to jump in, and they know it. They know it. They're not dumb.
No. I mean, they're looking at ways to corral this and to be able to monetize it in a way that serves them and maximizes their profit. You know, at the end of the day, it's about incentives, and they're going to try to maximize the dollar as much as they possibly can that they can squeeze out of this. So if they can delay it, if by delaying the adoption of Bitcoin, they can squeeze that extra marginal dollar, that is what economic theory tells them that they should be doing.
Right.
It's a rational move.
For them, definitely. And it's funny that Goldman Sachs, or Goldman, is going to be the first Wall Street bank to go for Bitcoin. And they're going to have this, what was it called? They're doing this, the futures market or something here.
I think they're trading
options.
They're trading futures, including trades. Yeah.
You know, once Goldman gets in, everyone else is going to get in. Jamie Dimon is going to flip just as quick as he's been touting this whole Bitcoin thing is a scam.
At the end of the day, once one shop opens up,
everyone wants in.
Of course, because why would you cede one bank all that advantage? So, you know, and then they'll just say that because they have to do it to protect their market share, right?
Right.
And again, that too would be rational. But it's just sort of like, who makes that first move? So Goldman might show like they're, you know, holding their nose while they do this, but they know the amount of money that they can save.
Yeah.
And that's not a joke.
Right. And not only save, they're going to be making money. You know, just saving would be making a money, but they're actually going to be making money on top of money going, offering this to clients, to people that want to invest. And you're right. Once they're in, once they've opened up, which it's going to take them weeks, maybe even a couple of months, but I think they'll do it quickly, knowing that how much money is involved and exactly where that price of Bitcoin currently is. This is a sweet spot for them to get in and slide right in.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think that is an interesting point, because, that's one of the points of concern for me for looking at where Bitcoin is at. And right now, where are we? So we've gone down to just over 9,000. So 9,050 is where we're at right now. But here's what's a concern, is that the rate of new adopters, the new entrants who are adopting the use of Bitcoin for whatever reasons and however much they're trading, that is fairly low.
Right.
I mean, I'm not as much of an alarmist because people were comparing it, you know, the talking heads on CNBC and elsewhere were comparing it to the December 17th high point. And with those weeks prior, how many people were opening up wallets, new wallets, and the Google searches and so forth. But the thing is, a lot of people who bought at the top kind of got burnt and they're not happy. No one ought to be, especially if they sold at the bottom, which they shouldn't have.
Right.
I am not above saying that, you know, on the run up, FOMO got me too, but I was not going to sell.
Right. Well, that's again, that goes back to you believing in the technology and not just being in it for the gains or for the money.
Correct. I'm not averse to Bitcoin going up to 20,000 or 200,000. I would love that. But more so than that, I definitely want to see the technology come to fruition. But what we were talking about was the amount of people getting in the game and the pie getting larger. And I think that's really what the banks would also like to see at the end of the day is more and more people getting into the game, because then it makes a more compelling case for them to embrace this. And because there's more money into it. And at the end of the day, if it gets bigger and bigger, the banks not getting into it would almost be criminal. Not legally, but practically, because they owe it to their shareholders.
When there's money
to be made and they're missing out, why are they the ones missing out when other banks have gotten in? And that is what will get all of them in line.
We want that, right? We want institutions to start entering, because it's only going to drive that price up. It's going to start driving more innovation as companies and banking sectors get involved.
And yes,
we want both of that. I want my Bitcoin to go up in price, and I want to see innovation where it becomes like an everyday use. Like, we use PayPal every day. Even that's becoming inundated, but you know, we're using our phones to send money. Give it another 10 years. They're talking how maybe it's going to become a cashless society because of cryptocurrency, and I'd love to see that.
And honestly, for the most part, for me as well. I mean, I don't use cash. It would be a rare occasion when I have cash, and so I mean, I'd say that for a lot of us, that already is true. But for many, it's not. And there is a good reason to have cash, honestly, because
nefarious uses.
Not nefarious uses. I mean, I wouldn't. I don't have any nefarious uses. But
well, I'm saying, if they're going to call Bitcoin a nefarious use, I'm just going to turn it right back around.
But you know, just for the ease of being able to use credit creates a lot of problems, because that is what kind of led to the crisis, the financial crisis in 2008, was the lack of savings, you know, over generations in the U.S. And when you got, you know, people got more and more into the ease of using credit cards and so forth, and just charging everything, and you know, people, emotions get the best of us. There is a reason why almost everything out there ends in, you know, 0.99, is because...
We don't want to see that next number.
Exactly. Because our brain thinks it is cheaper. And, and you're wired to buy based on cues. And a lot of, you know, money and time has gone into research, human behavior. So so we're used to just spending. And that creates a lot of problems, and it creates these cycles that are very destructive. So being in a cashless society is a little, you know, it's a little bit of a, it has costs and benefits. And although I am very much a cashless person, I probably spend a lot more than I should.
I think we all do. I think our emotions get the best of us, and we all tend to spend a bit more than we really want to. But before I diverge onto another topic, I think the banks are going to want to get in. You're absolutely right. And they're going to want to get in and get as much as possible, because if we look now, there's only about 4 million Bitcoin left to mine. I mean, we've, not you and I, but I guess the populace, 17 million Bitcoin as of last Thursday. And so as we have less and less to mine, I think that price is going to go up and that scarcity is going to go up.
Well, yes. I mean, I think, again, it's a matter of supply and demand and perceived benefit and perceived value.
Right.
Because if everybody just decides that it doesn't really have value, then it has no value. Because
it has no value. Right.
Yeah. At the end of the day, everything has value because we say it does. And a thing is only worth what I'm willing to pay for it or somebody else is willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And
it seems like the big players are willing to pay for it, and they see it as a scarcity, because if you remember earlier in April, we saw George Soros taking steps, and he was taking steps in making some serious investments or thinking about making investments. And then now, obviously, Goldman Sachs is hiring crypto traders because they're, I'm going to say it as they say it, their clients' interests. Mm-hmm. But even the Rockefellers or the Rockefeller Empire, as we see it, they seem to be getting into Bitcoin. So it seems like almost about one out of five financial firms are already either in the market, and then the rest of them are expressing that they want to get into the market in the near future. And so it reads to me that they see this scarcity as something that the people want, and they don't want to be left behind.
Yes, and I think you're right that there is an allure of something that is in short supply and is designed to be in short supply, and mm-hmm. And obviously we know that it's not like it. There is no way possible that the 21 million Bitcoin limit can be breached, that we couldn't have more, but it would require a consensus, and for anybody who's lived in a democracy. Having consensus,
that's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, consensus is very difficult,
right.
Very, very difficult to achieve. However, the issue of scarcity, I think, may not be the only reason why banks would want to get into it. And coming from a financial services background,
right?
I think a reason why I would have wanted my clients and the clientele to be exposed to a different asset class is for diversification purposes.
Right.
I mean, the stock market, they've been saying for a while that would not get the kinds of returns that it's gotten. And it's been on this crazy, crazy long bull run that has lasted, a decade. And without, to my consternation, massive corrections, because I've been waiting for large corrections so that I could come in. And so I have actually, I won't whine about my own missing out on corrections, but it's healthy, and it's unhealthy to be on a long bull run for this long.
Right. And
what
scares me is possibly that, the 30s, we might be headed that way, because anything that goes up that high for that long has to come down. It has to.
Yes, and it should. If for a healthy market, there has to be a correction. But the other challenge is that, again, it at the end of the day, value is in the person who's buying. It's in their mind, right? Like whatever they're willing to pay for it, or if somebody's willing to part with it. And and companies are making record profits. They have been for a while. And we know, because the incomes have not been going up, so the workers are not getting it. So we know the companies are making a lot of money. So there is one good reason for markets to be going up. Mm-hmm. But again, as an advisor looking out for somebody's interest, and although the fiduciary rule, whether that's in effect or not, if you're thinking about the client's benefit, you want their money across many different asset classes, because for obvious reasons.
Right.
I think people who are listening probably understand diversification.
Diversification is the best way to, absolutely.
Yeah. And also the stock market, because it's been doing so well for so long, is not going to do that indefinitely. So when the returns are meager within the stock market, where else are you going to be? You know, you need to be in precious metals, or you need to be in minerals and so forth. Well, this crypto is a whole asset class, and not correlated with the rest of the market, and it's up and coming. So having a certain percentage of your portfolio in cryptocurrency, you know, it behooves that move, and it makes sense to have a certain percentage. I would not say a large percentage, but at least a certain percentage.
Right. And like John Pfeiffer, I think he's a partner at Pfeiffer Capital. He basically went on to say earlier this week that Bitcoin is the first viable replacement of gold. I mean, that alone speaks volumes, especially in that diversification concept that we talk about here.
Yes.
If it's digital gold, then yeah, why wouldn't you want to be involved in it? Because the other things may go down. Well, this one is new. It's, you know, that's going to go up, especially if we take a look at that whole gold and Bitcoin correlation we're seeing.
Right, right. But, you know, but I hear that said a lot. You know, Charlie Lee uses that Bitcoin as gold, digital gold. But so historically, gold, you would not want to be invested in gold historically. Like over 100 years, over 200 years, being in the stock market, you would have made a lot more money than being in gold. I mean, that's just a fact. I think when people say that it's gold, it's digital gold, I think what they're talking about is not that the value of it would go up that much, but it's that it's scarce. It's a scarce resource.
It's a scarce resource, right. Yeah, there's a finite amount.
There's a finite amount. And I think that's where the... to me, that analogy loses its power right there, because besides that, I would not want to be in gold. I mean, gold does not grow at the rate that the rest of the market can, and multiple types of markets can and have over the last century or so. So, but Bitcoin, what it is able to do and can do, again, it's because it's not just about Bitcoin, it's divisible. And it's the, you know, the 10 million Satoshi per Bitcoin.
Right, right. Correct. And if we do look at it as quote-unquote digital gold, as we want to say, you know, you're right. Gold needs to be, in order to make money, the market has to be volatile. And if gold isn't volatile, and if Bitcoin is like gold and it's not, well, at least we can see in the current trend, it's not that volatile. It doesn't really move, which is kind of frustrating to me. But at least what's interesting is that the other ICOs, Ethereum or Litecoin or the other ICOs out there, of the 15,000 or 50 million that are out there, are highly volatile. And that presents a very good opportunity to make some money.
Right, right. I mean, the volatility is a trader's dream. Yeah. And so yeah, that's definitely there. You know, they're riding the cycles up and down and making money both ways. And now with the advent of the futures market and being able to short, you know, and take the other side, there's more money to be made. But and also that has what has brought a little bit of a stability and the tightening of the spread in terms of the price movement of Bitcoin. And I think that is probably to our
advantage.
Let's just say, in the long run, I think, yes, that is probably better, because, you know, my heart was in my mouth when it was going up and when it was coming down, because that just is not good. You know, something should not be going up or down that fast.
Right.
And and which is why people, it can scare people away. And actually, in a it way, has. That is... Yes, clearly it has.
These last few months definitely has scared people away.
Yes, yes. So I think a bit of a stability and a more reasonable rise with the corrections that one should expect, and which ought to happen, which are not happening in the stock market, by the way. It's nice to see that.
Right.
And hopefully the stock market will follow suit.
Yeah. So before we go on, and I definitely want to get your input on the since you do technical analysis at the Crypto Coin Group for traders, I definitely want to dive into that for a brief minute or two. But before we do that, I want to kind of one more segment here that I really want to talk about is this class action lawsuit against Bitcoin.com and Roger Ver. Oh gosh, that name just you know how I feel about Roger Ver. But it basically gained traction last week, and it was beginning to, you know, it looked like it was going to go somewhere. But apparently it was shut down.
It did not end with a bang, but with a whimper.
Now, I'm sure Roger loved that. But, it seemed like they actually had something. I just don't understand why the Bitcoiners out there just didn't. They said it was a lack of donations, but they didn't put their weight behind it. Because the one thing that really got me, and when I invested or started investing in this realm, it was something that confused me. Bitcoin.com isn't Bitcoin. It's actually run by Jihan Wu and Roger Ver for the Bitcoin Cash. The Bitcoin Cash altcoin. I'm not even going to call it what Roger wants to call it.
Right. It's, you know, it's definitely misleading and greasy and... Yeah, I wouldn't want to touch it. I would not want to touch it, and I don't touch it. What I did feel like the lawsuit itself, to me, I kind of felt the same as Charlie Lee and his tweets about this, mm-hmm. is that it didn't sort of make a lot of sense. I don't like it. You don't like it. Charlie Lee doesn't like it. Others who understand the difference don't like it. But at the end of the day, people who are investing, you know, should at least do minimal amounts of research. So I think, you know, when we're talking about, you know, being able to own your own wallet and be able to control your own funds.
That's a big responsibility.
It's a responsibility. And I think so some of it, to me, I feel like it's a minimal amount of responsibility that an investor needs to have is to check the difference between Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. And when they're calling something Bitcoin Core, that should bring something up. It did for me. Like when I heard Bitcoin Core, I was like, what the hell is Bitcoin Core? I need to look that up because, you know, that's not what I was going for.
So
I would not put money into that. And why would I want to put something into Bitcoin Cash when there are many other derivatives of the name Bitcoin out in the marketplace? So why not any of those?
Yeah.
So why not any of those? Why Bitcoin Cash? And to some extent, I think it is because it's worthless. Not worthless. it may be. So it works both ways.
Right.
But it's cheaper. And that's why people are putting money into it.
You know what kind of gets me, and this is probably why we're on Crypto Coin Guru. We want to educate the masses out there, is because it is slimy. It is very greasy. It's, you know, there's mom and pops. There's people who haven't done their research because we're so comfortable with the banking sector about other people taking care of our money that we maybe aren't used to having this. This type of responsibility and having to do our own research, and not many people invest like you and I do, or you more than I in the stock market. So they're not used to doing this type of research. But what was interesting is I was starting to see that people would buy Bitcoin Cash, assuming that it was Bitcoin, and they would send it to their wallet, and then it's lost because it's not Bitcoin.
Yeah. And that is a true shame. I wonder if there is a count of how many coins have been lost that way.
I would love to see.
Because, you know, that could potentially be a basis for a lawsuit. If people have lost money, it is because they were potentially misled. And that could have a basis. I'm not a lawyer, but...
I think that's what they were going for. That's why the suit came about, but it went nowhere because there was just no funding or there was no donations. you know, I guess it is what it is. We're going to have to deal with this Bitcoin Cash thing, and for a while, until, you know, it proves itself to be either useless, or until, you know, Roger Ver and Jihan Vu decide that they grace us with some type of wonderful technology where maybe even I'll jump in on it. So it's either got to perish, or it has to evolve. It's just the spokesperson can't be all that Bitcoin Cash is about.
Right, right, right. Well, we were, I think, moving towards Bitcoin, and as a trader, as a struggling trader, I should say, because I really am an investor at heart. But when this darn thing keeps going and it never stops, it's, you know, the opportunities are there. So I've been looking at Bitcoin, and I had a concern because the ascending channel, you know, the trend that it had going up, it had been in a consolidation period for, since, what was it now, April 24th or so. We saw some rises, but it's been sort of moving sideways for a while. And a few days ago, I would say about the 6th or so, it broke out of that channel on the 7th, which is about two or three days ago. And right now, it has broken the support level, and it's falling somewhat fast. So right now, since we were talking, it was at 90.50, now it's at 89.85 and falling.
I
think it's dropping, and traders are going to start getting out very soon. And I'm seeing sell signals on TradingView.com. And it makes sense because it broke out of that channel. And I was hoping that we might see the candle go high and get back into the channel, but it's not happening right now. And I don't think in the short term it's optimistic. Although on the daily chart, the stochastic, the RSI, is oversold. So what that would mean is that it's not bullish, but when something is oversold, you know, it turns up. Momentum, which is the intraday momentum, is just over 50 and trending up, which suggests that we should be heading higher. But
going up,
but who knows? I mean, this could, when you're oversold, you could stay there for a while, and we've seen that in the past. I mean, the last time I'm looking at the daily chart, and the analogous place was March 9th. And we stayed in the oversold territory until the sort of the signal for buy came on, and that was March 18th. So yeah, that was about 9 days.
Yeah, that was a painful 9 days, if I could remember.
Yes, and it had gone down to 7792 from 9200. So. Yeah, so I think we might be heading for a correction. And I didn't really get a whole lot of chance here to look. Okay, so give me a second or two. So the 100-day DMA moving average is at, 88.65. So that could potentially offer some support. And you know, let's hope it does and we see a bounce. But if not, then we could be in for a bit of a
choppy ride.
yes.
Which isn't new for any of us, but for anyone new out there that's just investing now, it might be time to hold on, not sell.
right, not sell. Or if you're a trader, you know, this is an opportunity to sell and buy back a little lower when the signals are more appropriate. Of course, that is not, I'm speaking now from, you know, as a trader and not as an investor.
Yeah, and I think our listeners out there that are listening, you'll notice that Gaurav is actually talking from a trading perspective while I'm talking from more of an investing perspective. So in my idea, I would basically just wait for that choppy dip to come in and then put more in. and then go get ready for the ride up. I'm not one to actually sell. But yeah, this, you'll see two different methods of investing, and whatever works for you works for you. It's not financial advice. We're not saying do it one way or the other, but we're just saying, you know, when you do it, do your due diligence, do your research.
Yes, yes. And again, in investing and trading are different approaches. And one's long term, one is responding to technical charts and signals that we see in charts, and buy and sell or hold for the short duration, based upon what we see. And there are many different ways to read charts, but trading is not necessarily investing, which has more of a longer time horizon. So, and again, as I was saying, the choppiness of the markets and cryptocurrency, for traders, it's a dream.
Right.
If one were doing this all day.
Other than if we want to buy some more in, but we really like to see it go up. But again, anything going up too high, too fast is never healthy for the market anyways, for an investor or a trader.
Right. And well, not for a trader. For a trader, well, it's okay.
See, that's why I'm the investor, not the trader.
Right, because you can quote unquote scalp, get a you know, a few percent gain, and depending upon the amount of money you're dealing with, you can, you know, that can be fairly lucrative, and within a short amount of time, you're able to get a certain amount of gains, and you're out. You're in quick and you're out quick, and there's a percentage gain. You know, the stock market historically does, you know, over the last century has done about 10%. Of course, not counting expenses or taxes. But we can do that every day in cryptocurrency, right?
Right. Taxes, so, that's maybe something to attack in the next podcast or something, because that's a hairy topic to begin with.
Right, but not with me. I am not an accountant. And so we would have to get somebody who's informed from that perspective. And I'd love to learn more
Absolutely. Just like, you know, I hopefully that you guys out there listening are learning from the conversation and the fun banter we're having here. You know, we too are always learning. There's never a moment, at least in this space, that you don't learn. So we're not experts. And I don't think anyone in this realm really is an expert, but everyone has something to teach. And that's the great thing about crypto. That's the beautiful thing about it, is that there's always something to learn.
Yes, yes, no doubt. And go ahead.
No, go ahead. You were saying?
Manashi, why don't you, because I think you wanted to do a little bit of trading talk. So I was going to pull up Ethereum and see how things are looking. And
yeah, okay. While you're pulling that up, I think Ethereum was doing pretty well. It was over 800 something over the weekend. And then a bunch of FUD, where people were thinking that the SEC and CFTC were going to be making a ruling, which was far from the truth, on whether Ethereum was an ICO or not, sent the price, at least a lot of people, running for the hills. But I'm going to let you take over and tell us exactly what you see on the charts.
Well, what I'm seeing is on the 4-hour chart, the support line for the ever since Ethereum has been on an upswing has just been breached.
Okay.
But I'm seeing a long candle wick. So what that means is that there is buying support. Earlier, as soon as it hit that support level, there was a lot of buying people. There was a lot of support, and it got pulled back up to the 50-day moving average. And 50-day moving average has been acting as a decent support for the most part. And but it's been trending lower as of the last couple of days. And right now, it hit, and the next 4-hour. Started at the line, and we went down a bit. We found some support, but I don't know. The momentum is moving towards oversold. excuse me. As is the stochastic, it seems fairly weak because we were on an upswing and we are heading down now. So, so yeah, we are heading down from what it looks like into oversold territory for Ethereum as well. So it looks like, you know, Ethereum has just been on a heightened move for the most part with Bitcoin. But the trend has generally been the same for a while. There, there is a higher degree of correlation amongst the two. What I would like to just check out is, as you know, compared to Bitcoin, how EOS has been doing, because EOS has moved in very nicely of late, and it's something that I'm. Got in fairly early on the downtrend. No, not on the downtrend. I should say on the upswing. So I got some decent rise out of. Let me see how things are looking. Okay, so on the 4 hour, there's different levels of support, right? So we have a long term support which is much lower because it's been on a tear lately. So if I look at that kind of an uptrend, it's well above that. And the latest sort of a mini uptrend, I've seen EOS BTC, looking at those two and not with USD, it's bounced off of that several times over the last few days. And right now it is essentially at the line and bouncing, still in green, but stochastics are dropping. They are dropping pretty much. They've gone into bearish territory. Momentum is still high. So it's possible that the momentum might carry it through and we might see a little bit of especially if people take money out of Bitcoin, it might find its way towards EOS, IOTA, 0x, and some of the other altcoins.
Gotcha.
Exactly. But actually, I have not really looked at the whole market yet. So as we're talking, I'll do that and just give an idea to people who might be looking at trading opportunities on what else may be possible. So in the last, Bitcoin Cash, which had been on a tear, by the way, for the last week, it's up 10%. But in the last 24 hours, it's down almost 12%. So it has been going up a lot. It's very volatile. It's several times more volatile than Bitcoin. And so right now it's falling faster. EOS is also down almost 7%. For the hour, down a little over 1%. Litecoin is down almost 9%. Cardano, 11%. Stellar. Oh, yeah. This is everything is dropping. IOTA. IOTA. So IOTA in the last day is down only 1.5%. So
it's almost one of the few that's been in the green for the past 7 days.
Yes. So IOTA is looking very promising. 0x is down 11%. Yes, for the day. So up 30% for the week, though. So there are a few and. Yeah, there are very few options at this point that are doing okay of the top, let's say, 30, 35. And I'm stretching that for 0x. But gotcha. This is a shellacking that in the making.
I'm hoping for a little bit more of red, so as an investor, I can kind of get my pause in there a little bit more.
Because again, it's on sale, right? So,
if you believe
in the current currencies and you believe in the asset class, then it's only cheaper, and cheaper is generally good,
right?
Unless you're going to sell, and then it's not.
Then it's not good.
So so don't sell.
But yeah, I think this is great. Thank you for coming on the show, Gaurav. Hopefully you can join us again.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. If you you guys want to learn more about trading techniques and whatnot, or technical analysis can be seen on CryptoCoin Group almost weekly, and maybe sometimes even more frequently than that. It's just happening.
Well, guys, thank you for joining us for another episode of This Week in Crypto. As usual, the show must come to an end. Until next time, guys. Episode 16 is in the can.